Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Presented by Four Winds Casino and brought to you in part by Nancy's Pizza and your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. We are coming to you from
Live.
Four Winds Casino in
it's
New
beautiful
Buffalo.
Here. I love it here. Pure Michigan. This is the first stop.
This is, we just had dinner at the Copper Rock Steakhouse, and Chief had a...
Some had more than others.
18-ounce dry-aged... Was it a New York strip or
no,
was it
no,
a ribeye?
No, I go ribeye, medium rare ribeye. And now I'm ready for bed.
So if he doesn't make it through the show, you'll understand why. But it was a fantastic meal. And it's conference tournament week. And we've got the following week, the NCAA tournament. I may move in here.
This is the place where there's TVs everywhere you look. I'm overstimulated. SMU, Syracuse, over. That's the play.
Oh, is that
that's
the play?
That's the play for tonight at the sports.
Are you on the heater now that Big Cat is?
No, I got it as soon as it ended.
Okay,
I got in at game 17.
All right. Well, we got a lot to get to here. If you're close by Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, stop by. If you were going to gamble or check things out in the sports book, come by and say hello, and we'll catch up. You can also reach us at 312-332-3776. Show's also sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. Now, Chief, If Hawks fans are looking for signs that this rebuild is on the right track, look at the last couple of weeks. This is a different team since the Seth Jones trade.
I wish I felt this way in December. I'd be talking playoffs. that's how enthusiastic I am about the last 3 weeks. But Levshinov looks great. You have a true 1A goalie, a starting goalie franchise. That was a big box they had to check. Consider it checked. And now you can start to see the cavalry coming of the young guys. Nazar's up. Slaggart's up. Del Mastro's look incredible. And it's just going to be more and more as we go here as the college season ends. I believe Renzel will sign. Green will sign out of BU, and then Oliver Moore, and all of a sudden you go from having an older team, kind of a dysfunctional roster. Now you're going to have like 10 guys, 23 and under. In the blink of an eye, they've turned the roster over. So now it's time to actually start going and building and spending, and we can enjoy hockey again.
I do think the youth movement is significant. The room for someone who's in it and was there at the beginning of the season and now it was the older guys and Connor Bedard and Alex Vlasic to start the season. It was like the young – they were the young pups. Well, Nazar comes in. Slaggart is in. They call up Del Mastro. You know, on and on and on. And then you bring in Spencer Knight in that Seth Jones trade, and he's one of them.
Yeah.
And it solidifies – now, we already know that the back end, the blue line, is stocked. Not only what we've seen, we saw Artie Levshinov make his NHL debut the other night in Colorado. Really impressive. We know what's in the pipeline. We know what we've seen from Alex Vlasic already. We know what Bedard, he needs help, and he will get it. Mm-hmm. And we know in the pipeline there are forwards coming. Ryan Donato stays past the trade deadline. We'll get into that as well. But goalie's been a revolving door. We have Corey Crawford here at Four Winds Casino in the sports book. Nice number 50 jersey.
Similar haircut, too.
But since since Corey exited, it's been a revolving door at in the crease. That changes with Spencer Knight. And I think for him to come in and have that voice, that first game where he said, I don't care if we are in last place or if we are going to win games here, we are going to eventually compete for a championship. No young guy had been able to say that, Chief.
You can't.
They didn't have the cachet that Spencer does have as of playing 3 years in this league and winning a cup and being, you know, back up to Bobrovsky in Florida.
His name's on the cup. I mean, that does matter.
And I think it matters to the young guys that they looked over and said, okay, we've got a leader and he's in net. And And you put it all together, and it's been a really solid 2 weeks, something I didn't see coming.
Well, and he's well-spoken. He's a freak athlete. He makes saves who are like, oh, we can win this game. Yep. He makes saves that he has no business making. And then to your point, he is 23. He's got another year left on this deal. Then they can sign him to an 8-year extension. They can actually do that in July. So that's 10 seasons in the Chicago Blackhawks. It's like, all right, we know we have our goalie. It's Spencer Knight. Let's start to build out the other 19 guys that we have to start on a daily basis.
Alex Vlasic was asked about the improved play since the Seth Jones trade. And this is what he had to say. Having the young guys here has helped a lot. Bring that energy. It feels like a different environment. Everybody's playing for each other and putting their bodies on the line. And you're seeing that. Nazar gets hit by the wall. Who sticks up for him?
Colton Dock.
And I'm okay. Give me penalties like that. Right now, it doesn't matter where
you
they finish.
You can build a culture one fist at a time. And you need a little bit of that to get your team building the right way, to play for each other, stand up for each other. That's old-time hockey. We saw it in the Four Nations. It still matters. The teams that consistently win in the playoffs have that edge and that little bit of that bully factor, whether it was St. Louis in 19, Vegas. When Colorado won, they had it. Tampa Bay went out and added more toughness. Obviously, Florida's the biggest bully team there is. They're going to be in contention again this year. Colorado, just at the deadline, they're like, we're not tough enough. So they went out and got Charlie Coyle, who plays a heavy game, and then the center from the Islanders. I'm having a steak brain moment right now. Brock Nelson. So like they were like, we have Casey Mittelstadt. He's not ready for the war. So they went out and got a guy to play that more two-way, heavier game. That's what the Hawks need. Colton Dock provided that. And it matters. And it's like you start to actually build a culture of guys who are going to be here. It's been beautiful to watch.
Let's head to the phone lines. First up, Tom in New Jersey. Welcome to the Hockey Show. How
you
doing?
I love Tom in New Jersey.
How you doing tonight,
Tom? I love Tom in New Jersey.
Hey, boys. Sounds like a great road trip. I'm sorry I missed you last week. I got Tuesday confused with Wednesday, and I didn't get through. But it was a great show nevertheless.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, Tom.
I always look forward to it. So you alluded to the way the Hawks are playing much better now that Seth Jones is gone. And I don't think we need any more discussion on that. But I'd like to tie that in to a more in-depth discussion about the end of the Stan Bowman era. Because Stan Bowman was responsible for bringing in Seth Jones. And a couple weeks ago, I asked you guys to give a grade to Kyle Davidson. We agreed probably incomplete is the best grade to give him. So at the end of this, I'd like you to give a grade to Stan Bowman. Given the fact that he was responsible for one of the worst trades in the NHL history with Panarin, the Seth Jones fiasco, Brian Campbell, all the guys that left. And if we look historically, Stan Bowman became the general manager, I believe, in 2009.
That's correct.
The core of that team, Taves, Kane, Seabrook, on and on, were all assembled by Dale Talon, not Stan Bowman.
Mm-hmm. And Mike Smith, too, who was right before Dale, but you're right.
Okay, so I met Stan Bowman once in New Jersey at a Devils game. He came across as very smug, very arrogant. I think the only reason he got the job is because his dad is a legendary Hall of Fame coach. But to me, more credit should go to Dale Talon and the guys before him, and he should be held accountable for what happened to the Hawks with Panarin, with Seth Jones, and on. So I'd appreciate your candid assessment of the end of the Stan Bowman era in Chicago.
Okay. Thanks, Tom, for the phone call. Appreciate
Shall I
it.
Start?
Yeah, the floor is yours.
I've never been a Bowman guy. I think things really went off the rails after 15. The Sharp trade, bringing in Trevor Daley, immediately trading Trevor Daley. I don't think he had hockey sense. I don't think he knew how to build a team. I mean, how could he lost three separate Brandon Saad trades? How is that even possible? So the old cliche about how the guy like trades a pencil for a paperclip, for a credit card, and then eventually trades all the way up from a house. He did the opposite. He started off with a mansion and got down to being fired, which is like your paperclip. So that guy, he really did set this franchise back. I don't blame him for the Seth Jones trade because it was one last ditch effort at getting Taves and Kane to the playoffs. That was the goal. That made sense. I was on board. They needed a defenseman, but his drafting was horrible. They had Corey Crawford was the only Hawks goalie to ever come through. They spent a million picks on goalies and defensemen. They all flamed out. So his ability to draft, to really evaluate his internal talent, just a big miss. The Hartman trade miss. Like, he had so many missteps, really, kind of the whole time. He never had a first-round pick get to his second contract.
All right, so let
F minus.
The GM for three Stanley Cups gets an F minus from Barstool Chief.
F minus.
I'm not going to become a Stan Bowman apologist. I am just going to present facts. That's what I do. I do agree with Tom in New Jersey that the foundation of those cup winning teams were selected by Mike Smith and Dale Tallon for the most part.
Yes.
But I got to give Stan some credit for assembling the rest of the roster and having to do it in a salary cap era where they were cap-strapped each and every time.
Why were they cap-strapped?
Because
you overpaid guys.
Well, no, because the NHL didn't move their cap up the way normal leagues do.
Yes.
Now, they are this year coming for the first time in forever.
Yeah.
But it either would stay flat or go up $1.5 million. And when you have success and you win Stanley Cups, the byproduct of that is players get paid, and they usually get overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you solve the problem of keeping a championship team together when they're going to get top dollar on the market and your salary cap is not going up appreciably?
How has Washington done it? How did Pittsburgh do it? How did Boston do it? All those teams.
I'll tell you, Sidney Crosby has left millions and millions on the table. He's playing
Fair.
For $8.7 million.
Totally.
He should be playing for 14 or 15.
He could have definitely gotten that on the open market. He wants 8.7. He just wants 8.7 every time, 8.7. But I do think that Bowman, he overpaid Seabrook.
That was a horrible contract.
That was a horrible contract, and it's like, who are you bidding against? And then the whole thing, the other part of that, the way you keep those teams on the rails and keep the championship and the playoffs coming is that you draft and develop. So you're going to have to lose guys. Tampa Bay lost Steven Stamkos. They're Stanley Cup contenders still. So the cap comes for everybody, but if you have drafted and developed properly, which he never did, you're able to insulate yourself against the hard cap because you continually have guys on rookie deals. And he did have Andrew Shaw, guys like Shaw and Saad and Panarin who had cheap deals. And then
the Panarin is inexcusable.
Correct.
And correct me if I'm wrong, have you heard over the years that management forced the hand of Panarin? And it was an overreaction to being ousted in the playoffs, and the narrative was Panarin can only play outside the dots and not inside the dots, and that's not how you win come playoff time.
All right, but if you're Stan Bowman and John McDonough gets the idea that he should trade Panarin, and then you go and do it, you're still responsible. Your job is to make the hockey team, and you have to tell the president, who doesn't own the team. John McDonough never seemed to know that. It seemed like he thought he owned the team. But his job is to be like, hey, you hired me to build a hockey team. Just because you don't think Panarin can play in the playoffs, I'm not trading him for Brandon Saad. That was crazy. It was always crazy.
David Portnoy texted you right now and said, Chief, do this.
Oh, I would do it.
Okay. All right.
It's not, but like, Dave is the king of my industry. John McDonough came from the Cubs. Like, he hired Stan to do a job that he couldn't do himself.
He was president of the Chicago Blackhawks. He was higher on the food chain than Stan.
Yeah, but he's not a hockey ops guy and never was. So,
well,
like,
but Stan never played the game.
But this
he
is
happened
like
to have a dad who was the winningest.
It was very clear
coach
that he never played
NH.
The game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will also say
the Dave Portnoy analogy does not hold water.
The folks here at Four Winds Casino, they differ. They feel
okay.
differently. Dave Sharfee.
Now, Dave can tell me to do anything, and I will do it.
Okay. I will. How about this? Early on, they had a decision after the first cup to either hold on to Antti Niemi or hold on to Nick Jalmerson.
Great decision.
That was okay.
Great
and
decision.
I also give Scotty Bowman some credit for that because at that time he was a consultant.
Yep.
And look, you can say what you want. he built the gold standard in Detroit, and it was smart for the Blackhawks to bring him in the fold in the infancy of Stan's general manager.
Definitely.
So, but again, lots of mistakes. He gave out no trade clauses like they were Tic Tacs.
Yep.
The Brent Seabrook extension was
ridiculous. But even after 10, I hate to relitigate things from 15 years ago, but even after 10, where you the cap forced you to trade Byfuglien, it forced you to get rid of Eager, and you know eventually Campbell was the next year. Those are still good assets, Dave Bolin. He didn't get anything of value back or turn them, even if you got a second-round pick, he never cashed in on any of these assets in a way that helped the team.
All right, let's talk about the current general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, Kyle Davidson. On the other side, we'll get into what he did at the trade deadline, what he didn't do, and what he was personally coping with leading up to the Seth Jones trade. It's unbelievable. I haven't heard that story. It's coming up next. 312-332-3776. We're at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan. If you're in the neighborhood, stop on by. It's the Hockey Show on the road on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. New Buffalo. This is a live broadcast of the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. Here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
We're rolling on the Hockey Show, presented by Four Winds Casino. We are at gorgeous Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan.
I'm going to move in.
You're going to have to bump me out of a spot here. I've already claimed the couch here in the sports book. Perfect. You got the tournament coming up. So I have an idea for this summer. We've talked about trying to get on the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
There's some great golf courses here in New Buffalo. I say you get Big Cat, yourself, I'll get Waddle.
We go
play 18, and then we finish things up here at Four Winds Casino. We go to Copper Rock Steakhouse, put a bow on the day, and then just gamble.
We might have to just make this a boys' weekend, an annual thing where we come out to the Four Winds in New Buffalo.
I think we've got a plan.
Mark the calendar.
You're going to live up to this. We're doing this.
You're going to live up to
okay,
it.
Okay, all right. 312-332-3776 is the way to get a hold of us. Thank you for listening on the ESPN Chicago app as well. So one thing we talked about early on was kind of the mindset, how the young guys have come in here over the last few weeks, and there's been an energy, and there's been a buy-in, and there's been they've stuck together, yeah. and they're sticking up for one another on the ice. But we've also seen Nick Foligno, the captain, who missed a couple of games with an injury. You know, he took a pointed shot at Seth. And basically said, you know, guys are playing together. They're playing for one another. They're playing to grow something here. Not worried about what's gone on or what guys are feeling. Everyone here is pulling on the same side of the rope. We know we've got to pull ourselves out of this. It's a credit to all the guys that after a lot of distractions and the deadline, we're seeing a group that has come together here. It's encouraging.
Man, he hates Peter Mrazek, huh?
Yeah, right. Right, Craig Smith could not get out of here quick enough.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously, so he mentions distraction and trade deadline twice in a two-bite situation here. He's clearly calling out Seth Jones. I mean, you talk to different players and people within the organization. Seth's not a bad guy. He came here under different pretenses.
Yeah.
He thought, you know, Stan was GMing for his job and was trying to, you know, not use the word rebuild, retool, and keep things going with Kane and Taves until the end of the line. But Seth never lived up to his 9.5
Correct.
AAV. And it was messy the way he went out. He could have gone out much cleaner here in Chicago. But he decided to make it public, even though behind the scenes, they'd already talked about it and it was already in motion.
Yeah, it seemed like he wasn't leaving anything to chance. Like he wanted to force his way out. He kind of called his shot. He only had two teams on his list, and he got one of them. And I was surprised. I feel like they're probably just different factions of the locker room, where you have a group that really liked and appreciated what Seth Jones brought on a daily basis, and maybe other guys who didn't. And now that that divide is effectively gone, you don't have to necessarily pick sides. I'm not saying how deep that divide was. But now it's just like, yeah, everybody is pulling from the same rope. And they do play a much more competitive brand of hockey, and Connor Bedard included. I think he has looked completely refreshed the last three, four games, battling, you know, playing more responsible, not as much freelance stuff. Like, he's looked great. So maybe there was something to that, and it's like that chapter is closed, which is the saddest, most nondescript, like nothing happened in that chapter. it was the most forgettable.
Seth called it the darkest days in recent memory of the Chicago Blackhawks.
I wish I had one of those Men in Black devices just to erase my brain for the last 4 years, because that whole Seth Jones era was absolutely pathetic and miserable across the board. So now we can just pretend it never happened.
Well, some of us were doing the post-game show each and every night, and we have nightmares about it.
You might need therapy.
I already have therapy. I need to add an extra day to that. So Kyle Davidson, we talked before the break what he went through personally. In the latest installment of the behind-the-scenes show that the Blackhawks put out, it's called Every Shift. You can check it out on YouTube or on the team's app. He underwent pulmonary valve replacement surgery during that Four Nations faceoff.
Yeah.
So during that 2 week break, he went to the Mayo Clinic.
The Mayo Clinic up in Rochester.
Yeah, and
I don't know if this is HIPAA violations, but
it's actually in the piece.
Yeah.
And you know, and to replace a valve that wasn't functioning properly. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, by the way, he was dealing with the Seth Jones situation, the demand to be traded, and he had the trade deadline. Not exactly what doctors would want as your way to recoup is throw yourself into a trade deadline situation, being on the phone at all different times of the day and trying to handle a roster.
I like the idea of him doing the deadline under general anesthesia. just going right through. Yeah, we'll pick up that $2 million. No problem. Just get the deal done. Get him out of here. But, yeah, high-stress job, high-stress situation. Really hope he's healthy and okay. Like, that's terrible. I know it's something he's been dealing with his whole life. It's not a fun procedure, but I think he was, like, up there one day, kind of almost outpatient overnight, like one stay overnight and ready to go. So, shout out Modern Medicine, keeping our GM on his feet.
All right, so he made the minor move of picking up Joe Valeno from Detroit for Mrazek and Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest move was the non-move. Ryan Donato, he put a first-round price on Donato, and he set it at that and wasn't going to move off it. They didn't get a first-round pick for Donato. So
Were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised.
Okay.
I didn't, even though it was a seller's market and Ryan has been on it, it's been a career year.
He's on it.
He can play up and down your lineup.
Yep.
And he only has a $2 million AAV, so you're not, it could fit under pretty much any cap situation.
A perfect rental.
But I didn't think he would command a first-round pick.
I would say in normal markets, yeah. Like, he's not a first-round pick. You'd be happy to get a third for a guy like that. But when you see guys like Jake Walman getting first and first being thrown in, you know, in that Seth Jones trade, another first coming back, that it felt like this was a year where people were just throwing him around left and right. It would have been nice to have another one. But he is a nice player. I would hope that they'd be able to sign him, you know, before he gets to free agency in the summer. And they have enough first-round picks, if we're being honest.
Right.
They have so many first-round picks, so eventually you've got to have guys that can play.
And it's not a great draft by experts.
What I was told is that anybody like 11 to 40, they're all kind of the same.
Right.
So it is kind of a weaker draft and kind of a harder draft to evaluate for a lot of reasons. So this wouldn't be the year to have one. But I hope they end up re-signing, because losing him for nothing would kind of sting. So let's hope they get a deal done, because they need, again, like, he is a guy who seems like he could be a culture guy, and he's been a top six guy for the most part for the Blackhawks. But you would hope in the future he gets bumped down as some of these guys come in and he's still a contributing player.
I would expect a 3-year extension somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 million a year. That would be kind of...
If I were him, I'd hold out for more.
Yeah, and somebody would pay him more.
I think someone, and then if you look at the deals that Davidson has given out to Anthony Seau and Foligno and all these other guys, they're all making over four. So Alec Martinez got over that much. So if you see the other guys on your team who are not as valuable getting those deals from your team, I think you're right to kind of ask for 4.5 or 5.
Let's go to the phone lines. Nathan in Schaumburg, you're up next on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. How you doing tonight, Nathan?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
Excellent.
So it's perfect because my question kind of lines up with the current topic. Would you have liked to see them go after Rantanen? I mean, they've got the picks. They've got the cap space. They could have sent Donato if they needed to. I feel like they need a big name to really jumpstart this thing. And then, you know, a division rival ends up locking in Rantanen long term. So I think that was a missed opportunity.
All right, thanks for the phone call. We both love Rantanen.
I love Rantanen. I would doubt that he would have signed here.
Well,
I don't think he would have signed.
He would go to Carolina and sign with them when they offered him over $100 million. I don't think he would have bought into where they're at in the rebuild.
I would agree. He wants to win, and I don't blame him.
I also want to get into Eric Tulsky, the general manager. And maybe we'll do that on the other side.
Okay.
So he was up for the GM job here in Chicago the same time that Kyle Davidson was interviewing. And he's looked at as the boy genius, a Harvard grad.
He's an analytics nerd.
Well, let me tell you. Some of the things that he has done, namely this Mikko Rantanen trade that he made and what he got in return, is disgraceful.
Colorado, they look like geniuses now. Because Martin Natchez is not a bad player. And he only makes 6.5, and he's signed for next year at 6.5, too. So you're getting he's not quite as good, but he's a comparable skill set guy. And then they're able to move him off the books and add Coyle and add Brock Nelson. And they are a stronger team after that trade. And Carolina is dead.
I think Colorado had the best trade deadline of any team in the NHL.
I agree.
They went from a top-heavy team with Rantanen to one of the deepest now in the National Hockey League.
And Rantanen, he wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire. He's a great player. He wasn't lighting the world on fire for Carolina. So you add Natchez to that MacKinnon line. They still look pretty good against the Hawks, those two combining together. So I think that I think you're right that Colorado has had a perfect deadline, and now they went from a team where it's like, maybe if they get hot, now they've become probably one of the three favorites in the West.
Jonathan Toews went on record a couple of months ago with GQ. He took it a couple steps further. He is trying to make a comeback. We'll get into that. Your calls at 312-332-3776. But first, we want to give away a $200 gift card. Four Winds Casino is giving away a $200 gift card. Be caller 10 to win now at 312-332-3776. You must be 21 or older. You must live in Illinois, Indiana, or Michigan. It's the Hockey Show on the Road, presented by Four Winds Casino. We're back after this.
Welcome back to Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. This is a live broadcast of the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. Here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
From Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan, it is the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Barstool Chief, Pat Boyle with you. I want to thank our supporting sponsor, Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. And congratulations to Chris and Elgin. He won the $200 gift card to Four Winds Casino.
Lucky Chris.
We'll bump into him this summer because we're going to be
on the boys' trip.
We're going to be permanent residents here at Four Winds Casino. All right, before we took a timeout, we talked about the general manager situation, Kyle Davidson, and what he has managed to do here in his first 3 years as the GM. If you go back to the interview process, Eric Tulsky was an assistant general manager at Carolina at the time, was a hot name.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually became general manager of Carolina. They've got a fantastic team. I think an amazing coach. Raleigh is sleepy, great town.
Yep.
But what he has done in back-to-back years with trading for Jake Guentzel and then not re-signing Jake.
Yeah.
And then acquiring Mikko Rantanen, and he gives up Marty Natchez, and he gives up Jack Drury.
I love Jack Drury.
And, has him for 5 weeks and didn't find out whether or not Rantanen would sign an extension.
That's That's a fireable offense.
Absolutely.
This is a fireable offense. This is a team that's been knocking on the doors. I don't blame them for the Gensel one last year. You've been close. They've been criticized historically for not going all in when you have a very good team. They finally go in. They get Gensel. He's a guy you would think would help them push towards that Stanley Cup. It didn't work out. They tried to sign him. He didn't want to be there. It is what it is. The Hawks tried to sign Gensel, too. He yes. had a destination in mind.
And he would have been fantastic.
Oh, he would have been great.
Especially
I love Jake Gensel.
Playing with Bedard.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. That would
yes,
have been perfect. But
been.
He would have been perfect on a lot of teams. Carolina was one of them. They wanted him. He didn't want them. That's the way it goes sometimes. The Natchez for ranting it is it's inexcusable. And then trying to get out from under it and with trying to do the Marner deal, and Marner saying, I'm not going there either. That now they're just kind of stuck. I do feel as though they need to almost blow up their team now and start over because it's not getting any younger.
They end up with a small center in Logan Stankoven and his 16 career goals.
Yep.
And then the two future first-round picks. Look, the problem is they're built to win now. Those two future first-round picks are not going to impact their lineup for 4 to 5 years. So
yep.
they're not a part of this window foreseeable. Now, they tried to make do and trade Rantanen straight up for Mitch Marner. Mitch has a no-trade clause with Toronto. His contract, as we all know, is up. He will be an unrestricted free agent this summer. He has had a fantastic Selke-like season.
Career year.
And he used his option and said, no, thank you. I want to stay put,
yep.
and I'm not going to approve a trade to Carolina. The question is, did asking Mitch Marner poison the waters between the Leafs and their hometown kid, Mitch Marner, so much so that it's more likely that he would leave for a destination like Chicago in the offseason if they were the highest bidder?
It can't help. It can't help. So if you're not wanted, which is probably the way he's felt the last several years, it's not the first time they tried to trade Mitch Marner. That was a rumor in the summer. I think he nixed a trade in the summer. He is having his best year. I think it all comes down to the playoffs if he performs. But it's the talk had been, will Marner give them a hometown discount? I think that's out the window. Now he's going to hit the market, and if the Leafs are the highest bidder, he probably stays. If he's not, maybe he's gone, and maybe he's here.
If Colorado has success, and by the way, Colorado's going to probably play Dallas in the first round. That's the way it looks.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a bloodbath. And it's going to, for the good of the game, it's going to suck that a Stanley Cup favorite is going to be ousted in the first round. So I would love to see them go back to 1-8, 2-7, so on and so forth. This forcing to play teams within the division to create a rivalry. What would create a rivalry more? Playing Dallas and Colorado in the first round or in the Western Conference Finals when it is one step away from the Stanley Cup?
I know my opinion on this is unpopular. I like the divisional format. I wish they didn't.
You're the guy.
I am the guy. I wish they didn't even have the wild card. Give me 1-4, have like old-time hockey, have divisional playoffs. And if you think about what the best rivalries are in hockey, even in our lifetime.
We'd never get out of the Central with the way it's going.
The way it is now.
Yes.
But when it was – Now, this didn't happen because of the divisions, but that rivalry between the Canucks and the Hawks in the early 2000s.
Had nothing to do with,
I agree.
With what division they were
I
in.
I agree. That's a fact. But if you set up a system where that becomes more likely, then I am in favor of that. But the thing where they're like, hey, we don't want fighting, but we want rivalries, and we're going to change the playoff format to have more rivalries, but we can't have any bloodbaths, that it's just like the whole thing is fake. So I'd like to have more violence, make hockey violent again, and then I love the playoff rivalries that happen.
Do you like what happened in Boston? Basically,
yes. With Toronto? Yeah, I loved that.
Well, as far as becoming sellers and trading Brad Marchand,
oh.
and basically ending a run of a good 12
longer.
Or 13, 15
yeah,
years.
They were
well,
great.
They only won one cup, but they got to the finals.
They got to a game 6 against the Hawks and a game 7 against St. Louis. They were a great team for a long time. The Brad Marchand thing, especially trading him to Florida, who is
where Brad wanted to go.
Yeah.
I think initially they were going to try to send him out west.
Yeah, I think it's a shame because, you know, he got all emotional in the press conference in Florida. And I think they were off on their offer by like 800 grand. with the cap going up the way it is, he's such a legend. He's the last link to the culture that was built by Chara, Bergeron, and Krejci, and all these guys, Seidenberg. He is the last piece. And if you want to have any semblance of that as you're kind of retooling, rebuilding, he's the guy for it to sort of send him to your biggest current rival. That, I don't know, just give him the money. Just give him the money.
We talked about the Hawks having 10 players, 23 or under, on the ice Monday night in Colorado. That included Artem Levchinov, the number 2 overall pick last year. I thought they threw him into the fire. I thought for sure he would have a morning skate in Colorado. They would practice yesterday, and he would make his debut tomorrow night in San Jose. No, no, let's pick one of the best teams in the NHL on a 5-game heater in altitude, and you know, one of the fastest players on the planet in Nathan MacKinnon, and just a loaded offense. They put him out there.
He was fine.
and his D partner, Alec Martinez, didn't get out of the first period.
Yeah.
And he comported himself fantastically.
He that was another moment, and I've compared it to like the old Cubs rebuild, where it felt like they had a prospect coming up like every 3 weeks, or it was Baez and it was Addison Russell, and they had, it was just one guy after another, like, oh my God, we're gonna be good. It won't happen that fast, but that was the feeling I had watching Levchinov, because it was an almost impossible situation to have success in for, what is he, 19 now?
19
as a defenseman in that situation. He did not look uncomfortable. He looked very confident. He was a weapon on the power play. He probably could have had a goal or a point in that game. And I thought he was pretty good defensively, too.
And he's a smooth skater.
Oh, he's a beautiful skater.
And to look at his path, Belarus to Green Bay and the U.S. Hockey League, to Michigan State for a year, to the AHL at the beginning of this year, and now to the National Hockey League. That's 5 different leagues getting, you know, baptized by fire here in North America, and he's done it in under 3 years. So that's a lot for just culturally.
Totally.
For a 19-year-old to handle it.
Learning the language.
He seems
like a cool customer, too.
They look like, really stocked on the back end.
They do. And more is coming.
I know.
With Renzel.
Sam Renzel.
Renzel will be here, hopefully, you know, end of March, April. I am actively rooting against BU and Minnesota. I want those teams out. I want our guys in. And you know, with you have all big guys. Vlasic can skate. Levchinov can skate. Renzel's a terrific skater. Del Mastro skates better than I think people give him credit for. Korchinski will come, you know, good eventually. That's a pretty big mobile defense, and that's the teams that win.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if they do indeed win the lottery and have the first overall pick. Will they go for the consensus number one, which is a defenseman?
I don't think it's as consensus as we've seen with like Bedard and Celebrini. I think there's still people who – Misa's having an unbelievable year. He does fit more of a need. It'll be – or Frundell. I think he's in that discussion now too. So it feels like there's a top three, and we'll see. It's hard to deny the need that they have up front. So I would not be surprised if they went with one of the two forwards.
On the other side, I want to talk to you about the college situation, the players that we expect to – see the Blackhawks sign here in a few weeks, and maybe, you know, do the Landon Slaggart and
Nazar
situation that we saw a year ago. And we also have to touch on Jonathan Toews. He's been skating the last 2.5 weeks in Arizona. He turns 37 next month. Does he really have a shot at returning to the National Hockey League? We'll discuss it. It's the Hockey Show at Four Winds Casino on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. New Buffalo. This is a live broadcast of the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. Here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Want to thank Charlie Bevins, who is our producer tonight. Sean Graney and Kevin Zipak back at the shop. Stu Lane, thank you for setting this whole thing up. Our boss, Keith Williams, is in the house as well. And Sharfy, It's been a big team effort. ESPN 1000 teammates, Paul Kim, Claire Vogel, Ashley Hoffman, and our Four Winds hosts, Amanda Maloney and her son Jerry, who apparently is listening, and Tiana Bergeson. Thank you so much. You're going to see us a lot this summer. We're going to be permanent fixtures here at Four Winds Casino.
See you every weekend.
All right. So we're having a great time here. The question I have for you, Jonathan Toews spoke to Mark Lazarus of The Athletic this week, and he'll turn 37 next month. He's been skating the last 2 weeks in Arizona. He made it clear he knows his time with the Blackhawks is over. But do you think, after being away from the game since April of 2023, and again, remember he missed that entire 2021 season with the chronic inflammatory response syndrome and the long COVID, do you really think the former captain of the Blackhawks can make a comeback at age 37, having been away from the game for well over 2 years?
I hope so. I hope, you know, he's healthy enough and fit enough that he's got all those issues under control, that he feels willing to give it a shot. I think there could be a situation like a Joe Thornton situation where if he's a fourth-line center, he can help you on draws and help you on the penalty kill, but he's not going to be Captain Serious, you know, leading you to a cup. But I love Jonathan Toews. He's one of my all-time favorites, so I guess I'd like to see him give it a shot, because the way it ended, other than the final day, which was written out of a script,
was not
appropriate for a player of that magnitude and that stature. So I hope he gets a shot. Like, it would be kind of cool if he went back to Winnipeg and made a team there, and they're a very competitive, they're, you know, top seed in the West right now. So if he could be a fourth-line center there and play competitive hockey, I'd like to see that.
Here's what he had to say to The Athletic. It's just that there's something left in the tank, and I want to explore it. I want to go have fun, have a blast, play with passion, but at the same time, I still have some high-level hockey left. I want to be able to step away from the game, having said that I've given it all, and I still think there's something left to give. He says he won't really know for sure of where he's at hockey-wise until this summer when he starts competing on the ice with NHL players.
Yeah, that'll probably be a shock to the system, I'm sure, after that.
He'll probably
be
at fifth third with Kaner and some of the other, the Hinostrozas and the other Chicago guys that come back to Chicago,
Hartsy boy,
in the offseason and train here.
Yeah, that'll be a good window into it, because those games get pretty competitive. And he's one of my all time, probably top three all time favorite player for me. I do think that if he accepts a reduced role, I don't think it's impossible, and I really hope he's fit enough mentally and physically to give it a shot.
Well, that was the thing,
and he wants to enjoy it. I feel like the last several years he was not enjoying it, and that was a factor here. So
I was told by, you know, teammates and some coaches that he would get on the bike and not even be able to pedal.
Yeah,
he had no energy, and it was for the, you know, and he was clearly out of shape when he was on the ice.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So if he's got that, if he can actually train and get down to 210 pounds and help a team for 12 minutes a night, that would be a great thing to see. But if it feels like he was miles off of that the last time we saw him.
All right, so there's about, 17, 18 games left in this Blackhawks season. Their road trip continues tomorrow night in San Jose. They've been on this uptick, 3-1-2 over their last six. How important do you think this last handful of games are until mid-April for this team, considering what you just saw over the last 2 weeks and seemingly how that's had an impact on the young guys?
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity to slingshot into next year. We've talked about it a million times, building the culture here. I think you want to finish strong. I want your prospects to get their feet wet, feeling good about their ability to play in the NHL so they can start on the front foot next year. And I think you kind of want to showcase these young guys for potential trades and free agents, where it's like, you know, it's not that dire there anymore. Like, we played against Levchinov. That guy's pretty good. So I think you want to have a little bit of that, so you're a more attractive destination, because they better start spending to go get the big guys.
Bedard, Celebrini tomorrow night. That's must-watch TV for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Both Very, very good players with high ceilings.
You get CHSN, or you?
I do. I'm on Fubo TV, so
okay,
I watch
right.
the Blackhawks
right.
every game.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll be
sure.
watching.
So I'm with you. And the other thing is, I would love to see a big fish added this offseason.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Marner route, whether it's the offer sheet route, which Frank Saravalli, who we've had on a couple times, he thinks it's going to be the summer of the offer sheet.
Yeah.
And then we've had others. Who have said
the opposite?
Yeah, so yeah. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
And teams, everyone's going to have more money, so it should be a situation where it's not going to be like last year with Edmonton, where you can take advantage of a team with an offer sheet. So it might be competitive.
All right, so Hawks back in action tomorrow night. They'll finish things up in Vancouver on Saturday. That's going to do it for this edition of the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Thanks again to everybody here at Four Winds Casino. We had a fantastic time. We will be back, I promise you. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Nancy Pizza and Chevy Drive Chicago. That's going to do it for the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. We will see you next week.